ولذلك قررت دعوة قادة ورموز القوى السياسية.
What you're hearing is the sound of Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi pleading with opposition leaders in Egypt to help him deal with a new wave of unrest around the country. A state of emergency has been declared in areas along the Suez Canal. And joining us from the center of the chaos today, Egyptian cities that seem to be cutting themselves off from the central government in Cairo, is David Kirkpatrick, reporter for our partner, The New York Times. David, welcome back. And what is this state of emergency? How likely is it to control the unrest going on outside of Cairo?
I'm in Port Said right now, where the emergency came into effect last night at midnight. And to be honest, precisely nothing changed. You know, the state of emergency, according to Egyptian laws, is pretty draconian. You lose most of your civil rights. The police can pretty much do whatever they want. And the president has all kinds of powers. As a practical matter, the police here are cowering behind the ledges on the roofs of their police stations and other facilities while the mob runs wild in the streets. And I've been out there, and I saw two armored personnel carriers full of police chased away from a funeral by an angry mob of civilians throwing rocks, thousands of civilians. And I would take a very significant military action to try to bring this city back under control. So the fact of the matter is that the emergency law, while draconian, is also sort of hypothetical. And I'm not exactly sure what the next steps are going to be.
So David, does the government understand that these major cities around the Suez are essentially lost to it right now unless something major happens?
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's why President Morsi tried to declare the state of emergency and a curfew. But the problem is bigger than the security issue. The problem is a lack of credibility for Egyptian leaders. There's a good portion of the people that don't believe their elected president, their fairly elected president, Mohamed Morsi, deserves that title. So there's a crisis of legitimacy and credibility among civilian leaders. And then another question of who exactly they would send to try to bring the city under control.
We're talking to the New York Times' David Kirkpatrick on a very sketchy line from Port Said, which is in a state, as he's describing, of essentially anarchy after a state of emergency declared, the government in Cairo having very limited ability to control things on the ground in Cairo unless a major military action takes place. Does this signal that the clock is ticking on Mohamed Morsi and that we're looking at another wave about to hit the beach there in Egypt?
You know, I don't know. In Cairo, the clashes are confined to very limited areas. Most people in Cairo can pretty much go about their daily lives without a problem. That's why what's happened here in Port Said is so significant, where you've seen the city really rise up and drive the police around the city off the street. And the problem is, so if they want to resolve this, how do they do it and who do they talk to? I ask people today, you know, who's a local leader? Who can stand up and negotiate with the government? And they said, nobody, absolutely nobody. You've got to negotiate with all of us. We're all one voice. You know, and the next thing they say is, this is the independent state of Port Said.
And that is mob rule, essentially, you're describing. And there's no faith in any level of government. And so there doesn't seem to be a path out of this at this point.
Yeah, I'm curious about what's going to come next. You know, but maybe I've heard circulating that the military might step in as a kind of referee between the Islamists and their opponents to try to come up with some sort of a brokered coalition government that would have more credibility with the people and could try to resolve this. But that seems a little bit complicated and far-fetched. The military ran Egypt for a good year and a half after the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak, and they didn't exactly cover themselves in glory.
Good reminder there. Reporting from Port Said, David Kirkpatrick, Cairo Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times. It's a study in contrast, or at least a chilling irony. The same convention hall where the governor of the state of New York called for the strictest gun controls in the U.S. to be enacted in the aftermath of the Newtown shootings is also the site of that state's biggest annual gun show, the New York State Arms Collector Trade Show. Governor Cuomo got his gun restrictions passed, but the gun show participants are either treating it like a non-event or as a reason to buy more weapons. Joining me now is WNYC reporter Robert Lewis. You went to the convention. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And what was it like? Just give me a sense of the feeling of the gun show itself.
It was packed. There were a lot of people there, a lot of people who seemed to feel the need to buy up, stock up while they still can. There's really a sense that there's going to be more restrictions put in place. And so as a result, people are trying to buy ammo. They're trying to buy these 10-bullet magazines, rather.
That are still legal.
They are, but not for much longer. And so there was a table sort of all the way in the back corner where there was always a crowd around it. I tried to interview actually the vendor, and he kept turning me away saying, "I'm too busy, man. I'm too busy."
Well, let's give listeners a sense of the convention itself. First of all, business is pretty darn good.
People are nervous about the changes in the law. The ammo portion does not go into effect until January 15th, 2014. But unless you've read the website, you may not be aware of that. So people want to get before they have to have background checks and special cards and everything.
People know the chapter and verse of this law and definitely want to buy in advance of the deadlines.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They've been following this incredibly closely and have a sense of what they're going to not be able to do. And so they are really trying to, the ammo in particular, stock up while they can.
For the week after Newtown, the NRA had an extraordinarily low profile, but that's completely changed, of course, in the weeks and months since. And at this gun show, the NRA had a pretty high profile. Listen.
I've been thinking about doing it for a while, and I want to support somebody who's going to help protect my gun rights now that they're trying to take them.
Is the law that just passed, is that going to impact you personally?
I have to register my AR-15, but aside from that, no.
Are you going to register?
I pretty much have to, otherwise they're going to try to take it, right?
Now, that's Chris McClellan, who decides he wants to join the NRA as a result of all this. And you're interviewing about the exact same kind of gun that was used in the Newtown shootings.
Exactly. I parked myself outside the NRA booth for quite a while, and it was a steady stream of people showing up saying either they wanted to renew or in a lot of cases, like Chris, had longtime shooters and decided they wanted to join for the first time.
And some people were really mad. Here's Pauline Dion.
Because I'm upset with what New York State is doing and what Obama's trying to do with the gun, making everybody sign up, taking some of our rifles away. I've never done anything bad in my whole life. I never even got a speeding ticket, so I don't like being lumped in with all the criminals who use guns for a bad purpose.
Now, that anger has really sort of changed the character of this that once was kind of a collector's show, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. There really was a high tension in the room. You'd hear people just murmuring, not just about the law, but about their displeasure with a lot of politicians.
And what do the old collectors think about that?
It's a different type of show, and all I'm getting is questions about, well, can I buy this, and can I keep that, and what's going on? I have no idea. Nobody's told me anything.
So it's interesting. There was, the sense of the old collectors are looking at this as suddenly a political organization, a political show, and he's sort of caught kind of flummoxed by the whole thing. Tell me about this guy, Tom Cameron, who you ran into.
Tom sort of seemed to sum up the feeling of I'd call it the fringe element, except there were a lot of people who felt this. They were sort of the angry Republican who really felt that there was sort of a communist takeover of the country, basically.
This is communism. They want to destroy the Constitution of the United States. But if you give them bastards the right to take away a semi-automatic gun, they're going to be after your grandfather's old Browning automatic five shotgun, your 740 Remington Woodsmaster, every gun that's a semi-automatic, which means you have to pull the trigger each time it shoots. That's what they'll go after. You can't give them an inch.
Tom Cameron there speaking at the annual New York State Arms Collector Trade Show. Robert Lewis attended it, WNYC reporter. Wow, those are fighting words.
They certainly were.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.